اختون ایتونام از بی اس بلشانا تورایا میقاتم یقره پروفیسر بنجامین ایساخان ایلخا استرالیای آتورایا اوت بریل گداها اطرا و خیل گروسلی گوم دیتت ملبن ساوونو تیل من ایران الپوت سموشتت منی عم بیتوتو و بابت پروفیسر بنجامین بگواره لغدا استرالیتا و گروسل بنجامین گوم دیتت ملبن مقر بنجامین ایلخا قلتت ایقارو شهارقا امتن آتوريتا من سبب ایلخا پروفیسر یو دراشه ات مدن خمس آیا و دراشه اسلامه و کی مقره یو بیت صوبه دیکن ایلخا من بیت صوبه بشرشای و دیه یو اغدانت ویکتوریا کتیبه لی الرابا من دراشه و بوسای بود ای که نیوتت مدن خمس آیا. سپریوما دی استرالیان ایت ایل خامن دانی سپریوم بوشری شایگ استرالیا و مسخ امرخلا قدانید بخاین یو امریکا مدوقت لا من نیویورک تایمز ین واشنگتن پوست تتلخ ایقارا و خشوپا را بگورا. اسپریوما بلدان و دانا کی پلتی الخات شرارا گاوی کی متخری شمانه یعنی کیم شمهی قعانی پرسوپ اکدمایه و کی قارلون مدبرانه ین پاقود گابو سایا ریسرچ لیدرز و ایلخ ایقارا ربا یورا پاش متوا قبل خاند اکدمایه وقد ماسه پرسوپا اکدمایت قانه الاها شما گاری کهوه ویدا یو متخد خمششنه الرابا من بوسایه و کتیو الرابا من شربه قا دو پلخانت وادله ین دو خقلت پلاخیل گاوه و هشیتا یو خقلت دراش نشایه و پریشایید بود مدن خمسایا میقرا ین پروفیسور بنجامین ایساخان پیشلم شمها ریسرچ لیدر گوده خقلا ویلا پرسد همزمخ امه ات مدیلم بزوده بودگانه و بودخیوته تلاشک کت او گروز سیله گو مدیتت ملبن ولیلوی تو رابا دانت خاوت عم شوتفوتن آتوریتا و تا دخلی شانه آتورایا رابا بسوره لی و کی پرمه الرابا خبرانه این احت پقتا بعواده و بلیشان انگلیسایا. بصوره وخ کل اخون نخت انقم هاویلی ایقارو شوهارا بیو اختون به تاویل اخون ایقارو شوهارا بیده برون ده امتا. پروفیسر بنجامین ایساخان. پروفیسر، ویلکم تو اسیرین پروگرام از بی اس.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
As I mentioned in the intro about the Australian 2020 special report that named you leading researcher in your field, can you please elaborate more about this award or the selection? On what basis a research leader is chosen or selected?
Sure. So not many of your listeners will know because it's something that mostly academics follow, but every year the Australian newspaper, which is a very prominent newspaper here in Australia, releases an annual research report. And in that, they aim to capture the leading researchers in the country. And they do this across every single discipline and field, so everything from engineering to medicine, health, nursing, education, and so on. And really what they do is they look at the top journals in every single field and who has been publishing in those fields and in those journals and who has been, cited, their work has been cited by other academics as important work. So I was very privileged and very honoured that my work in Middle East politics has been recognised as, the leading researcher in the country.
That's great. Now, we know that you are a lecturer at Deakin University, and you have your position, but having this award or this selection, which will be added to your portfolio, does it help you in any other things in the future research?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, these kind of awards and recognition in your field always helps because it demonstrates that you are really leading the field and doing some exceptional research. It helps when you're dealing with other colleagues across the country, but also globally. When you do research projects with others, these kinds of awards and recognition helps to promote your work and to also give people confidence that the work you do is of the highest quality.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. As we mentioned, you are a lecturer and a researcher at Deakin University in the Middle Eastern and Islamic Studies. This is a very, very complex field considering religious, historic and social components of the region. What inspired you, what led you to choose this field of studies?
Yeah, probably two things really. I guess the first one was, you know, my dad is an Assyrian. He was born in Iran, in Hamadan. And he and his family migrated to Australia in 1968. And my mum is an Australian. She was an Anglo-Australian, I guess, and she was born here. And so growing up in the sort of outer western suburbs of Melbourne, I always had an acute awareness that a big part of my identity or a big part of my social world, my family life, was connected somehow to the Middle East through this Assyrian connection. And I remember growing up and hearing a lot of stories about the region and learning about the region and the complex sort of politics and history of the region. And it really informed a lot of my childhood and a lot of my ideas and identity early on, I think. And then I think the next sort of main thing was that I was able to travel quite a bit throughout the region when I was younger, and that also sort of continued to foster and ignite this kind of passion for the Middle East. And then the thing that really brought it home to me, or made me want to pursue it much further, was the events of 9/11. Way back nearly 20 years ago now, and the onset of the Iraq War in 2003. And these were kind of huge global events in which I felt that in the West, at least, there wasn't a good understanding of the Middle East. And a lot of the things being said about the Middle East really didn't seem to resonate with what I knew and what I understood the region to be. Having traveled there, having been partly from there, I had a sort of a different view. And so I guess I wanted to study it further and to learn more about it, but to also play a role in educating future generations about the region.
And have you been to Iran as well?
I've never been to Iran, no. It's one of a few countries that I haven't been to in the region. My dad has never been back to Iran, and I also have never been. I guess right now is a terrible time to go to Iran for Australians. Many Australians will know Kylie Moore-Gilbert, who is a close colleague of mine who's been detained in Iran. And she's an academic, and there's many others. So it's not a great time as well.
Talking about your connection with your Assyrian heritage, how much influence did your... I believe that your grandpa or grandfather arrived very early to Australia, or he came after you, after your father came, or as a family,
came together. They came together, 1968.
I believe it was. Yeah. How much influence did he have on your life, or you didn't have much chance to...
We had a great relationship. I have very fond memories of him, of course. He passed away, sadly, probably about a decade ago now. And, you know, we were very close. He was my father as well, and most of my family, you know, a very intelligent person and a very, very aware and very, you know, a very diligent student, actually, of the Middle East. He would read widely on the region and was often talking about the complexity of the region, as does my dad, and as do most Assyrians that I know. It continues to be a very important topic to all of us because it's the homeland and because there's so many complex politics there.
Mm-hmm. And I believe he used to teach Assyrian language at one stage.
That's right. He was very active in the Assyrian community in Australia. He and the family that came with him were among the first Assyrians in Australia, or among the earliest, as I understand it. And, you know, therefore he was very passionate about there being an Assyrian community here in Melbourne, but also later in Sydney. And working with that community in terms of teaching language and teaching the sort of history and identity of the Assyrian people. And I even studied, although I've forgotten all of it, to be honest, but I even studied for a little while.
Alabit. Assyrian. You studied Alabit.
Yeah, yes, that's right. With my grandfather when I was very young, but that was a long time ago.
Yes, yes. Going back to your research, Doctor, and you have written many articles in many journals, solely or in collaboration with other academics. One article I read that was written by you and by Professor Lynn Maskell from Stanford University about the UNESCO's project Revive the Spirit of Mosul, published in the International Journal of Heritage Studies and in 2019, which is about the construction and restoration of destroyed mosques, artifacts and shrines in Nineveh by ISIS. How much progress have been achieved in this project?
Yeah, well, it's a big and complicated project. So let's take a step back to 2014. Seems like almost a lifetime ago, before COVID and before everything we're dealing with now. The Islamic State, which is a sort of a terrorist offshoot of Al-Qaeda, had been gathering significant momentum in Syria and in small pockets in Iraq, and suddenly they burst across a lot of the Nineveh governorate, including many of the Assyrian areas in the Nineveh Plains there. There's a huge Assyrian community. Of course, they had, prior to this and since this, also attacked many Assyrian communities inside Syria, in and around the Hasaka governorate as well. But in Iraq, if we focus there just for a moment, one of the sort of cornerstones of the Islamic State was the capture of Mosul. And this happens around August 2014. And ISIS, like many of the sort of extremist terrorist networks, had a really strong view concerning, you know, that certain archaeological sites and certain religious sites were blasphemous, were heresy, and were against their Islamic teaching. And because of this interpretation, because of this idea that these sites represented a blasphemous site, that they should be destroyed. And so in Mosul, they had an opportunity to do this on really an industrial scale. Mosul has always been a very multi-religious, multicultural, multi-ethnic city going back to really the dawn of human civilization. And we have in it the legacy of that history, everything from ancient archaeological sites, including ancient Assyrian sites like Nimrud and Nineveh and others, but also, of course, a proud Christian heritage that goes back 2,000 years and various churches and Christian sects and monasteries, wonderful monasteries and wonderful sites. And then, of course, other sites, Islamic sites, Yazidi sites. There are many across the Nineveh province. there are also Ottoman sites and so on right up until today. And the Islamic State destroyed a huge percentage of this. Untold numbers of churches, mosques, shrines, temples, libraries, museums, university campuses, scientific laboratories, everything that they thought contradicted them or undermined their very strict teachings. And in the wake of this, and with the defeat of ISIS around the end of 2017, there are many international projects to rehabilitate different parts of the territory controlled formerly by the Islamic State. One of them is UNESCO, and UNESCO has undertaken a really ambitious project, I think, to restore and reconstruct some of the heritage sites, particularly inside Mosul. The project itself is called To Revive the Spirit of Mosul. This includes some churches, some archaeological sites, some mosques, an ancient minaret, and so on. So there's a huge project there.
Mm-hmm. Finally, Professor, you know that Middle East is an interesting spot in the world, and there's always something big happening. I hope in future you would accept our invitation if something big happens, that you can be our guest to shed some light and analysis about a certain event, especially when it's a political thing. So I hope you wouldn't mind.
No, of course. That's a very important part of my job. I'd be happy to. I'd be honored by the invitation.
Actually, we are honored, Professor, as a community in Australia, to have a son like you as an Australian. Also, Australia is fortunate to have a son like you who has the capacity to analyze and to see what's happening in the world. And I really appreciate your time, Doctor, even though the past 2 days we've been trying to do the interview and some technical problems. But I really appreciate the time you gave us. Thank you again, and we look forward to talk again in another program.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you very much for your time.